Welcome to the first Renatus podcast of 2022. Paddy Finn gives great insights to Renatus investor and advisor Greg Dilger on his own exciting company, but also how the national grid works. It's fascinating to learn from Paddy the role electric cars, renewable energy, data centers, large manufacturers have on our grid. We in Renatus are trying to learn more and more about how we ourselves and our family of companies can reduce the carbon load on the world. And we definitely have learned a lot from Paddy's insights on this podcast, and we hope you do too.
I'm delighted to be joined this morning by Paddy Finn, the joint founder and CEO of Limerick-based Biotas, formerly Electricity Exchange. Paddy founded the business back in 2013 with his business partner, Duncan O'Toole, and it has evolved considerably since then. I've heard Paddy referred to as an energy entrepreneur, which is true, but he also comes from a very strong academic background in electronic engineering. He has a PhD and only recently was appointed adjunct professor of smart energy systems in UL. You can tell us more about the professor role later, Paddy, but let's start back in 2013. You could have easily got a job given your qualifications with any number of energy players at the time. So why did you and Duncan decide to do your own thing? What specific opportunity did you see?
So first of all, Greg, thanks very much for having me here to talk to you today and to tell you about a little bit about where I've come from and ultimately where we're going to now as a company. Our story really is for Biotas started in 2013. And I guess even before that, I would have known Duncan O'Toole socially, known Duncan quite well. And Duncan had a business in the energy space and still has Capture Carbon doing very well. And so I guess it was always a topic of conversation. What's the future of the power system? What are going to be the new services that we're going to need to help more renewables in the power system? And I guess it was quite readily apparent to us that electricity customers were going to play a bigger role in the operation of the power system. They weren't just going to be off-takers of power. They were going to be active participants in the power system going forward. And what electricity customers can actually do and the services that they can provide are actually very valuable. And our view was that those services were going to increase in value over time as they become more important to the integration of renewables on the power system, particularly with Ireland. Because Ireland is an island nation trying to meet quite stringent and very ambitious renewables targets, it was a great environment in which to develop a business in this area. And we also have very forward-thinking regulators and power system operators here in Ireland for us to work with in that regard. So we embarked on the challenge of setting up what was then Electricity Exchange and now has become Biotas. And there was four of us in a 3 meter by 3 meter room, pretty small room. But our focus was on hiring engineers as opposed to getting out there making sales. We wanted to develop a very technically strong service that could deliver enhanced value for customers beyond what was available out there. And that's certainly something that we feel like we've achieved.
Paddy, can I ask you, how did you fund that? You hadn't any great resources. How did you actually fund that stage of the company?
So it was funded by us as founders, between considerable time and capital contribution. But I guess it was lean. It was a very lean operation. But I think we ultimately grew ourselves to being second in the market in Ireland out of 10 players. So there were ultimately 10 players in our space, second in the market by 2017 on a sum total of about 330,000 euros. So that's very lean for a business. We're in the utility space. And it was largely funded through Duncan's company, Capture Carbon. Lots of 80-hour weeks, I guess, on the flip side. But we, as a company, we have never really taken on debt. And we've also, we're not in the mode of being frivolous with spending other people's money. And I think that gives us a very good attitude towards how we run the business. And we come from the old fashioned view of the world that the purpose of a business is to make money and create value and to ideally reinvest that in creating further value.
Paddy, I'm guessing many of our listeners don't understand how the electricity grid works. Could you do your best to try and explain it to us in layman's terms and also what role Biotas plays?
To an extent, the power system, I would always describe it as the most perfect just-in-time delivery system. that you can possibly have. You don't store pallets of electricity. You don't store them in stores in the cupboards to use later. When you switch on a light or you increase the amount of power that you're using in your home, and somewhere on the power system, power stations or renewable generators have increased by that exact amount of power at the exact time. So the power system is like a perfect seesaw where you have to keep it in perfect balance with supply and demand at any point in time, with generators on one side and customers using the exact same amount on the other side. And I suppose then the key players are you have your power stations and renewable generators who are generating power. That then is transported through the transmission system, which is like the arteries of the grid. That's run by AirGrid. And then it's distributed out to homes and businesses through the distribution network, which is like the capillaries. And that's run by ESB networks. And AirGrid, then the function that they play is actually like the conductor of an orchestra. So they are actually trying to conduct the orchestra to ensure that we meet the constraints of that just-in-time delivery system, that the amount of generation that's needed at any point in time is being delivered. And that's a very challenging job because electricity can't just be reliable most of the time. It has to be perfectly reliable all of the time. Then I guess your electricity supply company, when you pay them your bill, their function is actually to pay bills to the other stakeholders in the market on your behalf. So you pay your electricity supply company, and then they pay AirGrid, ESB Networks, the electricity market operator, then who distributes the power stations.
Okay, so where do Viotis come in that game?
So the difference in our approach is to make customers, turn electricity customers into a key part of that balancing of the power system. So as I said previously, typically, you start using more electricity, your neighbor starts using more electricity, and an equivalent amount of extra power is generated somewhere on the grid. With our approach, it's actually that if you increase your amount of the electricity you're consuming, we'll actually turn off or reduce a load elsewhere. So you start using more, and one of our customers will start using less by the same amount to balance what it is that you're using. And that means that the grid remains balanced without the need to actually turn up additional power stations on the other side. So when we talk about there that you pay your electricity supply company and they pay bills on your behalf, well, previously, when the power station got paid for generating extra power, but through this, the electricity customer gets paid, our customer who has reduced their power, they get paid for what they have actually reduced by. And that, I guess, as a company, what we do is we focus on additional value and services from the ability to change what customers are doing through characteristics like using our technology to enable them to do it particularly quickly in the order of milliseconds, to respond to problems on the grid. And then this helps to actually solve other challenges on the power system. So it's not just you and your neighbors coming home and using more power, which can be planned. You'll also have events in the system like a power station tripping out, a wind farm tripping out, that you need to balance the grid super quickly. And that attracts additional value if you can actually serve that need.
So when you talk customers now, Paddy, your customers, you're talking about large, this isn't applied to Joe Public as such. This is large users of electricity and you're aggregating them.
Yeah. So the customers on our side who are adjusting their power to actually make it available to other consumers on the grid are, they will be everything from cement factories, food and beverage manufacturing, to biomed and pharmaceutical companies. These would be large industries who have created flexibility with their loads, who have actually designed processes and changed processes so that they can actually absorb a delay in something happening by saying, okay, well, we've built in the flexibility that allows us to actually turn that off for a little while and we can recover the additional production later on. And that allows them to get paid for that. And over time, then we will work down, we will look towards lower tiers of the power system and more and more customers will get involved over time. But if you add up, effectively, we aggregate all of these large customers who are willing to be flexible. We trade it in the electricity market like a power station. And if you look at the aggregate of our customers and the amount of power that they're tested to be able to actually potentially provide to the grid, it's more than what was the country's largest peat-burning power station. It's twice the size of Ardnor Crusher, the hydroelectric plant that used to run the entirety of Ireland. So this is scale. This isn't theory. This is very much practice.
Viotis, as things stand today, what is the value proposition to the customer for to your customers? Why do they come on board clearly they're making revenue from this, but what is the main reason they come on board?
So I guess it is indeed twofold. It is bring in an additional revenue source that can fund further investment, particularly in the utilities on the site. And also then when looking at the carbon benefit from what's actually achieved from participating. So I suppose to look at the value proposition, we first have to really explain the revenue model, right? How do we make money as a business? And this is where the incentives to the customers lie, and also where our incentive to keep innovating and driving on lies. And it's that when we aggregate our customers and form a virtual power plant and trade in the electricity market as a virtual power plant, with the money that we receive then from the electricity market for what's the services that have been provided, we provide the majority share. We retain a small portion of that for our services and for bringing the customers on board. And we pass the majority of that then on to the customers who have provided the services. So it's I suppose, a somewhat unusual relationship in that we pay our customers. We also then, for our customers, we install all our technologies and systems that are needed at our cost to enable them to participate. So not only do we pay them once they're participating, but we will also fund the enablement of them actually participating as well. So because our customers are getting a dominant percentage share, that's obviously the revenue incentive for them, but that's also the incentive for us, because we are retaining a share, for us to be innovative in the solutions that we are developing that enable our customers to deliver more services to the market that will make them more money and as a result make us more money as well. And then there's key green credentials associated with what we're doing. If we can use demand response, particularly to avoid peak demands in Ireland, that's one use case, right? Peak demands. It's not just about the fuel that you're displacing and let's say the gas that would have been burned by a power station that would have been actually meeting that peak demand. If you build a power station to meet the last 200 megawatts of demand on the grid in Ireland, in most years, it might only get used for six, seven hours, right? And you've invested hundreds of millions in this asset that is used for a few hours in a year, mightn't be used some years, and etc. But also there's huge embodied carbon. If you look at a power station, and you can just imagine all of the resources that have gone into actually making the raw materials and all the equipment that's on that power station. Well, if we can avoid that, because that's both not just a cost investment, it's a carbon investment and an asset that really is underutilized. And if instead, from meeting those, providing the security around those demand peaks in Ireland through demand response and having customers be flexible, it means that customers won't have to react a whole lot, right? They're only going to have to provide services for reasonably short periods during the year, but they are helping to reduce and almost, you know, avoid that cost and carbon investment in that asset. And also then our customers provide that with our particular technology that we enable to provide very, very fast response. That actually provides high-speed services that allow the electricity system operator, EirGrid in the Republic and Sony in Northern Ireland, to use more renewable generation on the system, because they know that if there's a fault in the system, if they're using a lot of renewable generation, which isn't very flexible, and there's a fault in the system, that we can step in very quickly and change demand. And that allows them to increase the amount of renewable generation that they're using. So our customers, rather than just installing, let's say, renewable generation on their site, they are actually helping everybody in Ireland to benefit from higher levels of renewables.
And Paddy, just in terms of onboarding customers here, clearly you have to look at their business closely and their usage patterns. And does it take long to onboard a new customer?
The onboarding process for a customer is in the order of about 6 months. That it requires both sides of the table to become very comfortable with what's about to, with the engagement. So first of all, the customer has to see value in what it is that they're setting out to do with us. But also, I suppose what's key is we very much need to understand the impacts that this will have on the customer's site in order to make sure that they fully understand it as well. Because it's not a case that we just turn off the mains to the site or anything like that. What we need to do is work with the customer to selectively look at the processes that can actually provide this flexibility, any sources of on-site generation that they have, they could perhaps contribute and otherwise. And then once we've identified those, we need to then look at how this can be done and maintain the integrity of all the electrical and safety systems on the site as well. And that's I guess, a key part of the process. Then we undergo testing with the electricity market operator, and then the customer comes on board, and they're then ready to provide flexibility. But our customers, even once they join us, we've got a large portfolio of customers. So what we can do is we can allow individual customers, if at individual points in time, that because of a critical process they're running or otherwise, they need to make themselves unavailable to us, that's absolutely fine. They don't get paid at that time, and we'll use other customers instead of them. That just means that our customers know that they're not going down a one-way street they're not going down a road of no return with us. They're still in control of what they make available to us.
Paddy, you've clearly made a lot of headway, and you've got a lot of large customers on board. Like, Ireland is a small market. Is there much more to go for in Ireland in terms of that type of customer internationally? Can this service that you do here in Ireland, can you roll it out? Is it simply the same thing rolled out in different countries, or what's the plan internationally for you guys?
So, you know, we've come on a long way here in Ireland. We've effectively built a power station and quite a large one without actually building a power station. But there's still a lot of runway here in Ireland as we look at different customer types, both looking at different scale, both larger customers and smaller customers over time. And while Ireland is a small market, it's a great environment in which to develop the capability that we have, because Ireland is looked upon very favorably by other markets that are really following in Ireland's footsteps in terms of our renewable journey here. And how do you manage these intermittent and what are called non-synchronous renewable sources on the grid that are really challenging for grid operators to utilize? So there's a lot of, when we travel internationally, we meet other electricity market operators, it's apparent to us the regard that they hold EirGrid here in Ireland, and the approach has been taken to apply innovative solutions to addressing these challenges. Now, that doesn't mean that all of these markets are ready-made markets for us by any means, because what we do is heavily regulated. The electricity market, the market trading structures have to be in place, or we have to be able to help to guide getting them in place. But when we look internationally, renewable energy is, it's the order of the day. This is the trajectory where other markets are going. And we know that even if the market isn't ready for us now, we've got a pipeline of markets coming down the track. And we've expanded recently. We have an operation in Australia. We're setting up in the US at the moment. We'll be setting up in another European country later this year. And we've another 6 markets to follow over the next 4 years. So we certainly see that there's a strong opportunity for international growth in markets that are multiples the size of Ireland. However, there's still a lot of runway for us here in Ireland, particularly for us to continue to hone and develop the technologies and services that we offer in a market that I would certainly say is leading away in a guiding light to other international jurisdictions.
Paddy, I think that from what I remember, Viatas is running at an EBITDA of something of the order of 3 million, which is fantastic. But I'm thinking, based on the plans, international plans that you have, you've just outlined, I'm thinking that it's probably inevitable you're going to have to raise more capital at some point.
Yes, we will. And I think it's important to explain our attitude towards spending, though, before kind of addressing what we will be raising for. So we entered the electricity market in 2014, but we've been profitable since 2017. And that's despite having spent considerably on R&D prior to profitability. So it really delayed the point at which we reached break-even point. We did this by being a lean company and also being quite strategic in terms of how we spent money to achieve maximum impact. Since then, we've continued to fund our R&D from cash, and it constitutes about 40% of our team's effort. But the shareholders over the years have foregone taking dividends, despite being in a profitable state, in favor of funding further development that we believe can maximize the company's economic and societal impact. Now we are pursuing our international expansion, and we are funding the initial stages of this from the company's cash reserves. But over the next 4 to 5 years, we're going into several markets. And that means that we will be entering the markets in a staggered approach, but there will be considerable overlap between each of the markets. So that means that on a quarterly basis, we'll be hitting milestones. And the key milestones are first revenue, first income, and then profitability for each market. So in the coming years, what we will see is some of the initial markets will help to effectively cross-subsidize and fund the rollout into some of the later markets. But there is a period in the middle of that where the earlier markets aren't at the point where they're generating enough additional cash to fund the latter markets. So at that point, we will look to raise funds in the order of about 10 to 20 million euros in order to fund our continued expansion into other markets. But we will be doing so with a track record of having established ourselves in the markets, and actually a track record that demonstrates the success of the plan that we're pursuing.
You started in business under the name of Electricity Exchange, and a couple of years ago you've rebranded to Viotus. Presumably there was a lot of thought behind that. Tell us, why exactly did you change the brand and the name? And I presume it relates to sort of the sort of changed proposition and the evolving proposition. That
absolutely. So Electricity Exchange, it perfectly described what we did as a business and what we were setting out to do as a business when we started, allowing customers to exchange electricity effectively. But since then, our horizons have broadened, our technologies and services have allowed us to move into some other spaces as well as a business. And also, I suppose, as we are pursuing international expansion into various markets, potentially non-English speaking markets as well, sometimes you are better off to have a name that means nothing, but it certainly means something to us. So we are, I suppose, one of our key flagship devices, actually one of the first very high speed devices we developed was actually called Iotus. And then we worked with a branding company, Frawley Branding in Limerick. And we looked at all the relevance of that to our business, to our industry, and that's then where Viotus was born. And so for everybody who's been in the business for a long time, that certainly has relevance. But to the outside world, perhaps doesn't, and it's just another name. But it was important to have a milestone, a change, not just for the outside world to see us as a change, but also for our internal teams to see us that this is a change. It's a milestone change of direction for us as a company and broadening of our horizons. And it is, I guess, where we're going with this is our ambition is to develop products and services and deliver those services into markets where we can help to optimize the use of renewable energy worldwide. So as a business, that is our objective, is to look at the bottlenecks and the constraints that limit the use of renewable energy on power systems globally, and develop technologies and services that help to alleviate those constraints. At the moment, everything we do, or the majority of what we do, is through demand response, but we're certainly developing technologies as well in other areas.
Paddy, I could talk to you here all day, but we're limited with time here. But just a few topics, maybe that related topics, I'd just like to run by you that are important. I just want to see what your views on them are, but. For example, data centers. We hear a lot about data centers, and Ireland has become a big location for data centers. What impact do data centers have on your world?
Data centers are enormous consumers on the electricity system. A data center may consume as much power as 35,000 houses or more. They're extraordinarily large. And I think we're in an unfortunate position where we're looking at no more connections of data centers, particularly in the Dublin region, for the foreseeable. And I think that the opportunity that's been missed really is that data centers really could have been turned from being a key user of electricity, a dominant user of electricity, to being a provider of the services that help to enhance the security of the power system. And I think that really what would help the situation is if more data centers got involved in providing demand response services and providing the flexibility that helps the power system to use more renewables. Because there is concern that that data centers may be helping to fund the development of renewables on the grid, but the reality is that they are mopping up all of our renewables as well, right? But data centers have installed battery systems, generation systems, etc. They have HVAC systems that they could be flexible with. And if more data centers actually got involved in providing demand response in the grid, they would help the power system to use more higher levels of renewables, and it would certainly help their case. And I really hope that we see a sea change with the level of data center participation in demand response, and I think that could change the view on things.
Why, Paddy, why are they reluctant? What's What's behind
security of supply is absolutely paramount to data centers. And but I guess some of the challenges are that, first of all, the data centers generally aren't designed here in Ireland. They are built in Ireland and they're operated in Ireland, but the designs come from parent companies elsewhere, and they're built to spec, and it's a kind of effectively just build what you're told to build in that regard. And also for the data center industry, actually having an accountable green credit, a carbon credit or something associated with providing demand response, that will be key for them, because actually their environmental and sustainability goals are what they hold dearest to them above the revenue that we could generate for them. Yes. But unfortunately at the moment, and it's something that we certainly need to develop here in Ireland, there isn't an accounted a green credential for providing demand response, even though it does have renewable benefits. So you'll get a benefit if you put a, advanced thermostat controls into your house, right? You'll get, there's effectively a green credit for that. But there isn't for what we do, despite the fact that it has significant impact. And I think that is one of the changes that we could make here in Ireland, is to give the green credentials, and that will encourage large users like data centers that are ESG focused to get involved.
Paddy, electric cars, electric heat, you know, that's going to be a massive issue over the next few years. Again, in terms of impact, good or bad, or what does it mean, anything?
It means a lot to us. So what we do now is largely on the industrial scale, and we're operating, providing services into the transmission system, into the arteries of the power system. And when we look at the electrification of transport and heat, whereas I guess, you know, some eyes will look at it as a major challenge, we look at it as a major opportunity for these players to now come in and provide the flexibility to the system. So previously, actually, the residential sector wasn't very demand response friendly in Ireland, as it would be in other countries. In other countries, you have large air conditioning loads and houses, etc. But in Ireland, at peak time in a winter's evening, the things that you're using, your cooker, your lighting, your TV and stuff like that, aren't things that you want to turn off. You can't be left in darkness at 4:30 or 5:00 in a winter's evening. And really and truly, people have to get on with meal prep, etc. Right. But when you now bring on heating and electric cars into the mix, now your house is huge capability to actually orient its operation of these devices around pricing signals on the system. So in time, these assets, these utilities in your house, between your transport and your heating, will have the potential to make you money. And in doing so, what they'll be doing is they'll be delaying infrastructural upgrades on the system. So if we look at the distribution system in Ireland at this point in time cannot handle the level of electrification of transport and heat that we are aiming for. And ESB networks over the last few years have come to the conclusion, and very valid conclusion, that the answer to everything isn't more copper. The answer to everything used to be more power lines. But now the answer is optimizing the use of the assets that they have on the system. So to try to make the best of what's there. And then when they do actually carry out infrastructural upgrades, that it's needed. And that also then they try to optimize the use of those, and that they don't oversize. Really now electricity customers, the electrification of transport and heat are really going to lead us to this situation where residential customers are going to play a more active role autonomously with the power system.
In terms of international comparisons, some of this going on elsewhere, perhaps in the US, are they much more advanced at a sort of domestic level than we are in the way they engage with their electricity?
In certain markets, yes. In certain markets, it would actually be mandated that you actually have the ability to have remote control of, let's say, if you install a pool heater in Australia, they're now looking at the need for you to actually have metering and control on it that will allow an aggregator. It is an obligation. If you install air conditioning, it would also have this. So there are other markets that are at different places in the journey. There's elements of it that we are more advanced with, certainly in the delivery of the types of services that are needed to incorporate higher levels of renewables. And I'd say there's definitely other markets elsewhere in the world that we can take some cues from as well. There's some markets that have been doing this for a long time. And it might be that it's been done in the same way for a long time. They're dealing with legacy as well there. You know, the services haven't changed considerably over time. Whereas in Ireland, we initially got to leapfrog some of these. But I would say that there's mutual benefit to markets learning from each other right now. Some of them are doing certain elements better than us, and we're doing a lot of elements better than other markets. And we can learn from each other on that.
Paddy, another point I've seen and heard some talk about the possibilities of blackouts, given the stresses on the system. Is that a realistic proposition over the next year or two, or is that just...
No, it is. It's very real, and it's something that teams in Airgrid and Sony in Northern Ireland have been working on avidly for quite some time now, with foresight of what's happening on the system. And Airgrid would publish a winter outlook that has looked out at the winter of 21-22. It looks at scenarios and it identifies periods where there's a high potential for there to be less generation available on the power system than there is electricity customers using it. What we need to avoid is a national blackout. We certainly need to avoid the entire power system going down. And the power system has protective means of trying to avoid that. So it's a case of it kind of starts to cut off limbs so that the body can survive. If we have a national blackout, it can take days to get a grid restarted. Days. So you can just imagine the impact in a country if that happens. So I guess we got very heavily engaged through Viotis, and we're part of the Demand Response Association of Ireland. And the question was asked, how can demand response help to step up here? And our customers have definitely been utilized to a much greater degree this winter to help to reduce the peaks on the Irish system, to help to avoid us actually getting to the stage of blackout. So a very real risk, particularly on days when you have very low wind, your kind of frosty day, that's where it can become an issue. And you can imagine that everyone's used to power cuts when it's very windy and it's stormy outside. But this is actually where the opposite condition can lead to a scenario that you don't have much wind generation and that you might just have a failure of a large plant on the grid. And you just did not have the buffer room to take that. And again, as an industry, then demand response is trying to step in. And our customers are really stepping up to the mark and have stepped up to the mark this winter. And actually, I bet you didn't know this, but there are several hours where our customers were helping to provide the security for you to keep your lights on at home.
No, that's fantastic. Paddy, as a residential customer, and everybody listening to this will be one of those, how is all this going to look for us in the next 5, 10, 15 years? What sort of changes are going to happen? Apart, right now we pay our bill once a month and that's kind of it.
So I think, with what we've seen in the past with a lot of changes in technologies that have come into our lives, it's been quite seamless. And I would say that over the coming years, we're certainly going to see greater levels of residential demand response in the system. But it's not going to be a case that you're going to be coming home at 5 o'clock in the evening and you're going to be going onto some app trying to decide who you're buying electricity from, or you're going to be shutting something off in your house. Mm. This stuff has to just coexist with you. So I would say that actually the way that this will play out is that in the same way as now you go and you go to buy a new washing machine dishwasher and you're looking for that A plus plus, right? That you're going to be now looking for devices that are smart grid compliant. And when you bring home your new dishwasher that's smart grid compliant, that you will then register that amongst the other devices in your home that are smart grid compliant, and you will sign up to an aggregator, you will sign up to a Viotis of this world. And basically, okay, these guys are going to help me to maximize the benefit, reduce my costs, increase potential income from these devices. And how then it changes how you use those is... With your dishwasher, when you go to turn it on at 10 o'clock at night, you're not telling it when to start. You'll tell it when you want it to be finished by. And you'll say, as long as you're finished and you're done by that time, I don't care when you do it. So Viotis, over to you to make sure it happens at the best time when I make the most of it. With your electric car, you'll say, I want to make sure you arrive home with 20 kilometers in the tank. You say, I want to make sure I get to straight away a minimum of 40 in case I need to get back into the office or I need to get to the hospital or something. But please charge up to 200 by 8 o'clock in the morning, and I don't care when you've gotten it. And that's then effectively that, you'll just interact with your devices in a slightly different way. And somebody else, a third party like Viotis, is going to take care of trying to maximize the benefit to you for that.
Paddy, that's great stuff. I could speak to you for hours, but we can't. I did say at the beginning, when I mentioned your appointment as professor in UL, how did that come about? And can I ask you as well, how is that going to help you with regard to your job in Viotis and your role in Viotis? I can see, obviously, you're going to be interacting with lots of talented students and perhaps people who could work in Viotis. But what does this role mean to you?
I have had a long history with UL. I did my undergrad there, became an electronic engineer, did my PhD, two postdocs. And all told, it was 12 years, and 8 of those I spent working with now Professor Colin Fitzpatrick, who's now head of Department of Electronic and Computer Engineering. Colin really inspired me to get into this area to start. And what I've seen during my time working with Colin is how dedicated he is to making sure that the students that are coming through in UL are very aware of the importance of decarbonisation, the importance of achieving high levels of renewables on the system. High levels of renewables in all aspects of energy, and also minimizing resource usage. Mm. Colin was really just ahead of his time in that regard, always in my eyes. And Colin was anxious that the students that are going through the programs now in UL, electronic engineering, computer engineering, and other courses within the Faculty of Science and Engineering, get to see this world of opportunity that exists in the energy space, because most people, the thing with energy is we take it entirely for granted. Energy, like the idea of flicking on a light switch now, if this was 100 years ago, that would have been just like looking at magic to somebody, like a trick of the mind or something like that. Whereas now we take it for granted. And not only do we take it for granted, but we insist that we can take it for granted. So that means that we don't appreciate the facility it offers us and the utility it offers us. And when you look at new innovations like the iPhone coming out, the Tesla, what it's done for the electric car, et cetera, and you look at this amazing advancement with energy, as we try to decarbonize energy, the major challenge we actually have as engineers is actually to keep it the same. That's actually the challenge, is that the utility that the customer is offered remains the same amidst changing underlying conditions. Colin was keen to bring me on board in the capacity in UL that would help to expose his students and to highlight to them this world of opportunity in terms of the food for thought of solving very interesting challenges that all types of skills have to be brought to bear on. And certainly a lot of engineering skills, but all types of skills have to be brought to bear on solving these solutions. And I'm very flattered and honored that I was asked to do this, and I really look forward to getting to engage with students and with other projects that are ongoing in UL as well.
That's fantastic, Paddy. I'm going to wrap up now. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today and learning from you. And I hope those students in UL realize how lucky they are to have a fellow like you around. On behalf of the team in Renatus, I'd like to thank you for being so generous with your time today, and wish you the very best of luck for the future.
Greg, thanks a million for having me on. Very much appreciated, and I look forward to catching up again, hopefully before too long.